Jerry Ford, George Russick joining us now on the line. Staff writer for NHL.com, Mike Seisberger. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Thanks for jumping on this morning.
Hey, Zeiss.
How are you, Sherry? I was thinking of you, spending draft weekend in Dallas, and every time I drove by a Whataburger, I thought of
Whataburger. Yeah, there's a story there. Zeiss and I went through Whataburger at about 3 a.m. in a cab.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there were a few others.
Did you have a lot of Kool-Aid that night?
Lots
so you were a lot of energy?
Wiggly Pops, yeah.
Mike, we were talking about Arash Medani sitting on the outside of on a curb in Los Angeles, outside of a building, waiting for people to walk in to talk to John Tavares. Do you have an instance where you were sitting outside of a building and going, good God, what am I doing here?
Well, first of all, that's a good place for my buddy Arash. I mean, nobody does curbs like Arash does, but... No, my story would be back when I was a summer student at the Toronto Sun in 1988, up in Rexdale. I actually was at Ben Johnson, the house of Ben Johnson's aunt. And she was such a kind lady. She was, like, bringing me coffee. And so we watched Ben Johnson win the gold medal in Korea. And then, as we all know, what happened there, the failed drug test, and he lost the gold medal. So a few days later, my boss sends me back there, and all of a sudden, we are on Ben Johnson's aunt front lawn. There's all kinds of media there, waiting and waiting. I don't know what we were waiting for. maybe for him to show up. I don't know. But what we weren't waiting for, but what did show up, were the police, because she called the police on us to remove us from the front lawn.
Oh,
and I'm thinking, like, you know, a few days ago, this lady, I was sitting on her couch, she was giving me coffee, and next thing you know, we're getting the law enforcement to remove us. So, you know, that kind of gave me an education early on, is when you're in our business, you can go from being awfully good to pretty awful in the minds of people that you might be covering. So, yeah, that was my instance. I don't think that Pat Brisson is going to be phoning the police on Arash, but you never know what's going to happen.
You don't know that for sure.
Well, yeah. He can be pretty wild, right, Sherry?
Oh, I'm not going to say anything because, you know,
no comment.
I'm probably an accomplice in a few of those. So
okay.
Tell me, what are we hearing out of that office, if anything? That was a 2-hour meeting. He had another one late last night with the Islanders. He has another one with San Jose and Boston or Dallas today? San Jose and Boston.
Right.
So, like, again, by the third one, you're probably going, please, God, I just need to pick, because they must be getting so boring. But are you hearing anything out of the Toronto camp?
Not so much out of the Toronto camp, but I do know that I don't want to say that the Islander contingent is confident, but they certainly... There was certainly nothing in what happened yesterday with the Islanders that has made that organization doubt themselves that they have a very good shot of getting John Tavares back. And I've said all along, especially with the moves that were made of bringing in Lou Lamoriello, of bringing in Barry Trotz, you know, and maybe giving Gar Snow a less of a voice in this whole thing, that's where I thought John Tavares would land. We've heard the reports of an 8-year, $88 million contract, 11 per year. That's kind of what I thought the ballpark was going to be. So the money and the term, it's going to be around there. Obviously, the Islanders are the only team that can give him the 8 years. But, you know, we're talking about intangibles now. As far as Toronto goes, I find it intriguing. You know, there's been a lot of talk that I guess his fiance went to Queens. And, you know, the local boy coming back, which we seem to beat the drums on here in Toronto, like that everybody would want to play for the Leafs. I'm not so sure that John Tavares wants to be in the spotlight. He's never been one that's kind of coveted it. So that would be fascinating. If he ends up in Toronto, he's friends with Steven Stamkos. He knows what Stamkos went through when they wooed him to Toronto, and he ended up staying in Tampa. So it would be very intriguing if Tavares comes here, because even with the presence of Austin Matthews here, you know that the spotlight is going to be on John Tavares. And the question is that something that he covets?
Mike, we all know that if John Tavares, in fact, signs with the Maple Leafs, they'll have to juggle the salary cap around to fit everybody in. And William Nylander is the guy a lot of people talk about that. Potentially, they'll have to move him. He's a guy who's heading into the season without a contract. They have to re-sign him to an extension. So the way I figure is this. You don't want to trade one of your young, nice pieces, but if you're able to bring a guy like John Tavares in, couldn't you try to trade a William Nylander for something on the blue line that you desperately need? And you're kind of killing two birds with one stone here. You're solidifying your center ice position with a top 10 player in the NHL. You're trading one of your own young stars to beef up your blue line. Doesn't that just make a ton of sense for the Maple Leafs here, because you're essentially taking care of two problems?
No, definitely. And if you look at the big picture, George, think about that Boston series that the Leafs dropped in seven games. I thought that one of the guys that really stepped up, kind of a coming out party, if you were, for his presence in the NHL, was Kapanen. I thought that he played very well. He had a big goal in game seven. So there's a piece. You look at Andreas Johnsson, the way that he played down with the Marlies. He was the MVP of the Calder Cup playoffs. There's another guy that you start inserting into the lineup. So as skilled as William Nylander is, and you don't want to lose a guy like that, you do have some young depth up front. And so that's why I think that you make a great point. It's logical that, of all those guys, William Nylander is the guy that's going to, you know, take the biggest chunk on the off the books financially. Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews not included in that, obviously. But, yeah, he would be the one piece that you could kind of move to bring in a defenseman. Now, who's out there, who would be available, that's still a topic for another day. But I do think this, George. I think that Kyle Dubas has a plan A, B, and C, probably all the way down to the last letter of the alphabet, in terms of if John Tavares signs with us, this is what we're going to do. If he doesn't, this is what we're going to do. And I think that right now it's all in on John Tavares. But if it doesn't happen, I think I'm certain that they have a number of plans in place, contingency plans, to go in different directions.
Well, we're hearing whispers potentially, Mike, could Tyler Bozak, believe it or not, be a guy who could potentially come back here?
You know what? I wouldn't count that out, because, you can probably get him for a pretty reasonable salary. And, he's been here. He knows the system. You're not asking him to be anything more than a third-line center. Couldn't there be worse things that you could have than Tyler Bozak as third-line center if you're going to have Kadri as number two? So I do think that's an option. I think that will be more dictated, George, by what is the market going to dictate for centers once John Tavares is off it, because – you got Paul Stastny there. I would think that he would be number two on the pecking order of free agent centers after John Tavares. But then after that, it falls off pretty quick. So, the Leafs are going to have to play somebody as their third line center. It's all going to depend on what other teams are willing to pay for Tyler Bozak, because that's one thing I do think is that the Leafs will not overpay to bring him back.
And Tyler Bozak is a decent third-line center. He knows his role. He's got a wife and kids. He's from here. I guess what the allure to Bozak would be is if he wants to be a second-line center somewhere else. And that's, again, kind of the shakedown of what happens after Tavares signs. Now, speaking of Tavares, I am curious as to why he's so loyal, why he wants to stay on the island. I mean, he missed the playoffs for the second year in a row, and for the sixth time in his 9-year career there. So if he wants to win a cup, doesn't Toronto speak to him or the Lightning speak to him about hoisting that?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the Lightning, Sherry, because, that's where his buddy Stamkos is playing. And I'm fascinated, how Stevie Yzerman is going to juggle that salary cap to get to fit John Tavares in there. Because don't forget that Kucherov only has one more year left. If you bring in John Tavares, does that mean, inevitably you're going to say goodbye to Kucherov? I don't know how Stevie Yzerman's going to fit these round pegs into square holes, but I do know this. In 2016 at the World Cup training camp in Ottawa, which was one of the best access to players I've ever seen, there wasn't many media there. Steven Stamkos had just signed with Tampa Bay. So Tavares and Stamkos had their lockers up next to each other. And I remember going up to them, and we were just kind of informally, chewing the fat a little bit. And I said to Stamkos, now that you're a Toronto area kid, you've signed with Tampa, now Tavares is going to have to go through all this hometown boy coming to the Leafs stuff. What advice would you give to John Tavares as he goes down the stretch towards free agency? And Stamkos laughed. He looked at Tavares and he said, don't tweet anything about the Leafs because they'll think that you're going to immediately come to Toronto. And I don't know if you guys remember that, but Stamkos, when he was eligible for free agency that last year, tweeted something about Toronto, and all of a sudden everybody thought for sure that he was going to be a Leaf. And at that time, I remember Tavares saying that he had done radio shows in Toronto and that all they wanted to know is, are you going to become a Leaf in a couple of years? What's going to happen with that? Do you want to be a Leaf? And he talked about that, how he understood what the pressure would be like of being a Toronto Maple Leaf. And I'm just wondering now, we're 24 months later, is that actually going to come to fruition? It's gonna be fascinating to see, and I think that money wise, it's gonna be pretty much the same between all the teams. So it's gonna be intangibles, and with the Maple Leafs, I think number one, the chance to win, but number two, coming back to your hometown. I mean, he's from Oakville, but do you want the pressure and the fishbowl that comes with all that? And I guess we're going to have to wait and see. My gut instinct is still that he wants to go back to the Islanders. He's familiar with that situation. I think he likes being the big fish in the small pond. And, in an era where athletes aren't that loyal to organizations, I think John Tavares has been more than loyal to the New York Islanders.
Staff writer for NHL.com, Mike Seisberger, joining us here on the Jeff Blair Show. Mike, I asked this question to Jeff Merrick yesterday, and it's kind of frustrating to me that people just assume the Islanders are going to be terrible for the next 5-10 years, and he has zero chance of winning a Stanley Cup. Barry Trotz is a guy, the most winningest coach in the NHL the last 4 years. Lou Lamoriello, as you mentioned, brings some stability to the franchise. Barzal just won the Rookie of the Year. He's a dynamic player. Beauvillier's a nice young player, played for Canada at the World Junior Championships. Oh, and by the way, they just had two high first-round picks back-to-back in Wahlstrom and Dobson. Why do people think the Islanders have zero chance of eventually winning a Stanley Cup? Nobody saw the Washington Capitals winning the Stanley Cup this year, and obviously they have to go out and solidify their goaltending, but that take that, oh, the Islanders are terrible, they'll never win. Well, why is that, Mike? They got a good young team, and John Tavares being the number one center on that team, that will be a good team moving forward.
I agree with you, George, and let's put it in the local context, okay? At the beginning of the 2016-17 season, when Marner was a rookie, when Nylander was a rookie, when Matthews was a rookie, I remember most fans in Toronto, they didn't expect the Leafs even to make the playoffs. What they wanted to see was a young, enthusiastic team, and that's what they got. And if you'll recall, the Leafs blew a lot of leads early in that season, which was frustrating. But the fans saw a team that didn't give up. Look how fast that team came along, okay? 2 years later, we're talking about them being contenders for a Stanley Cup. So I look at the Islanders with the guys that you mentioned, I'll throw into the mix Josh Bailey. I'll throw into the mix Jordan Eberle, who, you know, despite his struggles out in Edmonton, showed very good chemistry with Barzal last year. And then you talk about the two picks that the Islanders got in the first round. They got those two kids at 11 and 12. Both those kids were projected to be top 10 picks. So this is a league where the turnaround can be very quick. Okay, and I do think they have the foundations in place. But I think one of the selling points for the Islanders, and it's going to be, this is going to be the key to that'll be contingent on whether the Islanders do become relevant again in terms of the talk of playoffs. They need a goalie. I'm not quite sure who's out there for that. I don't think that 37-year-old Craig Anderson is necessarily the solution. I thought that Grubauer was an option, but kudos to Joe Sakic in Colorado for snatching him up. So I think you're right, George. They could be a contender very, very quickly, but they need that goalie. And right now, you know, I Carter Hutton's out there, but you know, you wonder who it's going to be. Then again, this is Lou Lamoriello who brought Corey Schneider to New Jersey. This is Lou Lamoriello who brought Frederick Anderson to Toronto. So I don't discount anything from happening if Lou Lamoriello's running the show.
So Zai is the call to the hall today at 3. Obviously, Martin Brodeur should be a lock and will be a lock in his first year of eligibility. He'll be the marquee player. I would personally like to see Martin St-Louis in. He's in his first year of eligibility. I covered him in 1998 to 2000 in Calgary when he came in as a, you know, nobody because he wasn't drafted. And you could really see the upside to him. And he didn't even go for a bag of pucks when they got rid of him. He just walked away. And you would have thought that Calgary saw the upside to someone who was 5'8", being that they had such success with Theron Fleury, but he just went on to just be amazing. He had Art Ross twice, Ted Lindsay once, Lady Bing three times. Just an amazing kid. Do you think he has a shot on his first vote?
I definitely do, Sherry. And you know, you mentioned about his size. Imagine if he was playing, you know, and I know he just retired a couple of years ago, but the game has changed so much in the last 3 or 4 years. It's a game where the Johnny Gaudreaus and the Mitch Marners, teams are actually looking for players like that, even though they're diminutive because of their speed and their skill. And you just wonder how Marty St-Louis would have flourished in the system. I mean, think about it. He won a cup with the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2004 at a time where obstruction was still allowed. So it was difficult for a smaller player like that, and he flourished. So I would like to see him get in. I would like to see, I honestly do think that Daniel Alfredson should get in. And here's another guy, and Sherry, I know you covered him for a little bit when he was in Toronto. But I really think that Alexander Mogilny should get in because you've already got his two line mates from the Russian junior team, that super line of Fedorov, Bure, and Mogilny. Bure's in. Fedorov is in. If you look at Mogilny's numbers, they are very equitable to Pavel Bure's, if not exceeding them. And I don't see how you can have those other two guys in the hall without Alexander Mogilny. That's just my opinion. But I think this guy was one of the most dynamic guys in the league, especially when he was in his prime. And I think people forget he scored over 70 goals in a season. You know, and that's no easy feat. So I really think that, you know, I'd really like to see Elmo get in there.
And the great thing about Mogilny, obviously he's in his 10th year of eligibility, but the older people that waited a long time, like Recky, Lindros, Andrechuk, this all gives him hope.
Yeah, and this is a year, and that, by no means am I meaning to diminish the guys in this class because they're all, you know, I mean, well, Marty Brodeur, I mean, that's that I could even sink that putt. That's such an easy pick. I mean, the guy that has the most wins and most shutouts in the NHL history. But, you know, this is in a class where there's three or four slam dunks like we've seen it in the past. So maybe the door is open for this year for a guy like McGillney to get in. I'd love to see that. And also, just let me add, I'd love to see Willie O'Ree get in the builders category. You know, I know there's been a lot of talk about him and celebrations of what he brought to the league and kind of opened some doors. And I think this would be a really fitting year that he got into.
Mike, before I let you go, I think it's got to be Roenick over McGillney, does it not? And do you think some of the voters, 513 goals for Jeremy Roenick, and he has done a lot for the game being a broadcaster, and you can maybe put stock into that or not, but he is promoting the game down south, and that ultimately might help him out today in the Hall of Fame vote. Does Jeremy Roenick feel like a guy who's getting in today too?
I think he's one of the guys. You bring up a great name, and I do think he's one of the guys. And people will scour. They'll look at Alfredson's stats versus Roenick's stats. It's interesting sometimes. There's going to be a lot of debate with the committee. It's interesting that of why a guy gets in, or more importantly, why a guy doesn't get in. For some reason, there seems to be a segment that you know, just Jeremy Roenick doesn't strike them the right way. But yeah, I think he definitely is one of those guys that could see the door open. And it's funny because I think that Marty St. Louis should be the next guy after Marty Brodeur. But I really don't know. I mean, of those four guys we talked about, Alfredson, St. Louis, and the other couple of guys, McGillney and Jeremy Roenick, there's no guarantee for any of those four guys that they're going to get in today, and that's why I think it's going to be fascinating when the announcement comes at 3:00.
How about Haley Wickenheiser? She's been a trailblazer. Oh. She only retired in January, but they waived that 3-year rule for Gretzky in 1999. Do you think she gets the call?
Well, I think she's a slam dunk to get in whenever they do. It's interesting because she just did retire, how much traction she will get. So I'm not sure if she'll get in the class this year. I think she should. And you know what? I mean, you guys don't have enough time on the show to go over
No. The
reasons why she should be in there. But I think, when you think, and this is no disrespect to any of the other women who have represented this sport so proudly, especially for Canada, but when you think Canadian women's hockey in the last decade and a half, Sherry, don't you think Haley Wickenheiser, isn't that the first name that comes to your mind? It certainly is for mine.
Absolutely.
And more importantly, I think she is the name that even for the casual hockey fan, if you throw her name out there, automatically they know, they link that to Canadian women's hockey and especially so many wonderful moments at the Olympics.
Absolutely.
He's a staff writer for NHL.com, Mike Zeisberger. Mike, thanks for doing this.
Listen, thanks a lot for having me. Call anytime.